WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. It's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Good Monday evening. My name is indeed Kevin Tachi. You are listening to Monday Night Talk, and I am not alone. Joined for this session is Mr. Bob Hayes, who's been on the program before.
Kevin, how are you?
How are you, sir?
Thank you for having me.
Bob is here. Bob is here because he serves many different purposes. Usually good at the questions, a good conversationalist. Our guest for 620, she's here, Erin Andrews. Whether you know it or not, tomorrow is a big day.
Big day.
For the family, the paid family and medical leave law that, you know, payroll. We're going to talk payroll, the importance. Where are you at this point? You should already be submitting your information to payroll and having the conversation. Your employees should have already been giving you all the key information, signing the documents. I know I had to do it this week. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but Bob is a business owner. Other than being an elected official, so you lend a little bit of weight to this first conversation. That's at 6:20 with Erin Andrews from Straight Line. Straight Line accounting firm. It's an accounting firm located in Plymouth.
Yep.
President, right?
Yes.
El Presidente?
Yes.
One of many hats she wears. One of these days we're going to get her in on other business endeavors as well, right? Or is Straight Line the key one right now?
Yes. I have a little healthy thing that I do, but that's just a hobby.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One of these days we'll have to talk about the hobby.
That's fine.
Excellent. following Erin, we will have Norfolk County Sheriff Jerry McDermott talk a little bit about these playing cards that they have, the creation of playing cards. We'll find out the origin. This is something that is being used by other sheriff's departments in other states. And who is on these playing cards? Missing individuals, victims of an unsolved crime, people who are wanted. We'll talk with them about that concept. Who are getting these cards? Where can you get these cards? Then 7 o'clock, we're going to speak with Jeffrey from Brennan Smoke Shop along with Karen Brennan Fontana. So we're going to talk a little bit about the 4-month ban on the sale of all vape products. I don't know if you've heard Jeffrey's latest commercials or spots. We will talk with him, get his take on it as a business owner. Has he been talking with other smoke shops? Jeffrey doesn't just do vaping. He also does tobacco. So we'll find out how this ban is hurting him or how it's hurting some of his competition. And then at 7:20, we'll speak a little bit with Bob about an ongoing issue that's brewing in the region over the method that's used when it comes to deciding the assessments for each town, towns of Whitman Hanson, Bob serving as the chairman of the Whitman Hanson community, the Whitman Hanson Regional School Committee. We'll talk a little bit about that, knowing that everybody's in a financial crunch and knowing that the state is actually talking about a $1.5 billion education bill. I want to get your take on that as well. And then we'll wrap things up with Doreen A. Lang. She's the author of a new book, Putting Differences to Work, Hanging Under Your Stars, Volume 2. If you remember, we had her in previously to talk about retaining talent. You find someone who comes in for employment. You recognize their skill sets. How do you keep them? How do you keep them engaged long term. So we're going to talk with her about that book. That's all coming up in just a few moments.
The truth is, these high tobacco tax states are losing big money and revenue to the vape industry. These governors are trapped between the Public Health Committee, the Revenue Committee, and shrinking coffers. We all know this has nothing to do with public health, but everything to do with that almighty dollar. Martha Coakley classified e-juice as a tobacco product years ago. Now all you gotta do is pass a bill. I'm calling on the House and the Senate to regulate this unregulated e-juice market.
Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
You are listening to Monday Night Talk, our very first segment here. Worth noting that if we don't take phone calls, you can always post comments on our Facebook page, Monday Night Talk on 95.9 FM WATD. Also, Twitter. You can send me a message on Twitter, Kevin T-O-C-C-I. It's that easy. As we teased in our opening comments, Erin Andrews, president of Straight Line, here to talk a little bit about the paid family and medical leave law that goes into effect, I think, starting tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What has it been like for you for the past month getting folks ready for this?
It's been interesting. We've been trying to educate people as much as possible. We did host an in-person event and one or two webinars. I think what has been the most challenging is actually keeping up with the state, because they have been making changes. Even up until late last week. So it's just been busy trying to keep up with that, and then also decipher what the state actually means, since they don't really know.
Bob, you're a business owner. I'll let you ask the very first question. I mean, what has it been like for you as a business owner trying to get things up to speed when it comes to the PFML?
Kevin, it's another state-run program, and as Erin just said, they're not up to speed because they have no idea what they're doing. They're going to be putting small businesses at risk. They're even talking about if you have subs, you pay subs. You are at some type of liability for subs, which is uncontrolled. That's like saying, I buy stuff at Walmart. Walmart's got to pay some of my benefits because I do subs. It's ridiculous. It's just another debacle the state has done.
When you say subs, what is that a phrase for?
If you subcontract work out, such as, I'm in the automotive industry, so I sub out tons of work to mechanics. I have to make sure that they're deducting or paying these taxes from what I've read on this, or I could have some liability. It's not, I'm subbing this work out to a Massachusetts business.
1099 employees, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
So I can actually provide clarification on that. That's actually one of the things that's been the past week kind of crazy and really hard to explain. So Massachusetts, the people that have to be paid for the subcontractors, it's a calculation, but the subcontractors have to equal 50% or more of your workforce. But the business entities are not counted there. So if you have any 1099 subcontractors that you pay, so let's say you issued 10 1099s last year and six of them were an LLC, an S-Corp, or a Corp, you actually just disregard those. And then you look at the remaining four. And if those four considered individuals make up 50% or more of your workforce, including W-2 employees, then you're supposed to withhold taxes and pay in on whoever you pay, you know, starting tomorrow. The problem is, the past week, I believe, because the state doesn't date anything on their website and they also can provide no answers, is that their definition of 1099 contractor is very, very confusing on who needs to be paid. So what I really, really looked at this today and broke it down. And the way we, I guess, deciphered it is basically the people that you have to, if it qualifies for 50% or more, people that you have to withhold this tax from, if you are in the automotive industry and you issue a 1099 or you pay somebody that is in the same industry as you, so someone that changes oil that you just happen to, you know, subcontract, that is who you would have to pay the tax on. If you hire someone to clean your you know, your place of business, technically you're supposed to issue an I-9 to them, but that's that they're not part of your business. So, like, or if they, someone plows your driveway, you're supposed to issue a 1099 to them. That's not someone you have to withhold tax from. But the problem is, what the state's trying to do is they're actually saying that person, that automotive, you know, the oil, the person who changed your oil, is actually an employee. So what they're doing is trying to basically reclassify employees. And that's what the ultimate goal is behind this. They haven't said it out loud, but that's really what it is. So does that make sense?
It may make sense to the state, but the state doesn't make any sense.
No,
that's like saying if I'm in the commercial truck business and I send all oil changes to Jiffy Lube, their employees become part of my employees because it's a like business. Yeah. It's in a totally different location, a totally different thing.
It's very confusing, and it's really not clear as to what they're doing. Their rules on it and the guidance on it completely contradicts itself on their own website. We've actually started printing out PDFs of the law from the website and dating it so that we can go back and reference it later on, because they keep changing the website and not putting dates on it. So, yes, I think it's outrageous. We have a lot of contractor clients that do this. So if you're a general contractor and you hire an electrician, is that in your general course of business or is it not? That's the chaos that's being caused right now. And then they also changed how you count your employees, but that's another thing.
Now, instead of, we're sitting here talking about mm-hmm. employees, what if somebody is a contractor myself? Mm-hmm. I do 1099 work. Mm-hmm. I do pay quarterly. I do send money to the federal and state government on a quarterly basis. Mm-hmm. Is it okay for me to be sending money to the one pool, and then when it comes time to the end of the year for my accountant to do my taxes, that it's figured in that manner?
No. So what this is so if somebody pays you and you're a 1099 contractor, they're supposed to withhold the tax from you, and the employer, quote unquote, the person basically hiring you, is supposed to pay the tax in. However, so most people don't even know this contractor thing exists, that with this law. So at the end of the quarter, or I think they're going to catch up with it by matching 1099s. If you haven't withheld tax from these subcontractors and the state catches up with you, you're going to be on the hook for the tax.
I am, or the business.
The businesses.
Oh, okay.
The businesses.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. but the one, so as a self-employed individual, that's not on payroll. So if you just file a Schedule C and you're not an S corp and you're not on payroll, you can opt in to pay for this tax. And the tax is pretty low. So one of the benefits of being a self-employed individual is you could pay in, it'd be pretty cheap. And then if something happens to you, like if you own a business, you could actually collect on the disability, which isn't a bad thing.
Again, we're speaking with Erin Andrews. She's president of Straight Line. This is an accounting firm that is located in Plymouth. She's been kind enough to come in here and have these conversations with us, as this is supposed to go in effect as of tomorrow. I know that for one of my employers, media related, that we had paperwork that we had to sign, whether the company had some kind of where they were going to contribute or if it was strictly all on me as the employee, but that they would take a percentage out of my check. Mm-hmm. What would it, depending on what you make, I mean, I know, let's say somebody who earns an annual salary of let's say $60,000 or $70,000. What can that equate to per week? Do you have like an example per se for a median income?
I don't top of my head. It's withholding. So the tax that's withheld is withheld on the wage base going off of Social Security wage base. So it's up to like $160,000 or something like that. So if someone earns up to $160,000 or so, that percentage is calculated off that. The percentage itself is 0.62%. I don't have the exact percent. It's kind of crazy what it is.
So what I'm showing you right now is something that I was given as a W-2 employee.
Yes, here it is. So the total contribution is supposed to be 0.75%. That's what the employer is supposed to remit. However, if they have under 25 employees, then they don't have to pay the portion of it. I forget what the exact percentage. There's so many percentages thrown around on this thing. It's crazy. So, I mean, I've been talking about this all day, and I still don't know the percentages off my head. But it is a pretty small amount of tax withheld from the employees. But I mean, if you are not, if you're an employer and you're not complying, even with the notice requirements that were supposed to be done as of today, it's a $50 per employee, not just per instance. So let's say you have 10 employees and you only got three notices signed, you actually get penalties for 10, for all 10 employees, not just the seven.
How great are the penalties? Is there a dollar amount?
So it's $50 for the first instance, and then after that it's $300 per employee.
Okay.
That hasn't been done. So, and then there's penalties and what's up.
Benjamin has a question. Ben, do you have a question?
Well, not really a question, but I just wanted to add to what we were talking about. I just went over this, of course, with my employer. I don't mind sharing my numbers just as an example. What it looked like it was going to be was 35 cents, essentially, 25 cents from the employee, and then 15 cents from the employer. That's, again, for the numbers that it was given to me. That's what the percentage of the tax was, at least that they were throwing around. And it was saying that someone in my position, let's say if I take that full leave the schedule, the whole thing, and granted it, it's a maximum of $850 per week, no matter what you make, is the way it was explained to me. So if you take the leave and you go that whole route, at least in my situation, again, I don't want to speak for everybody generally, just in case, because it's all new, we're all confused equally. But that's what the numbers they were throwing around. It was going to be about 35 cents roughly, again, 25 cents from me as the employee, and then 15 cents from the employer as that contribution. So those were the numbers that were throwing around, at least.
Yeah, so I didn't catch the first part of your question. I apologize. Employers only contribute, have a portion they contribute, if they have 25 employees or more. So,
and I work for the company that is far more than that, absolutely.
Okay, so they have a portion they contribute to. Those percentages sound right. I haven't calculated per dollar out myself. But and then when you are able to collect, that's January 1st of 2021, then what you're able to collect actually falls in line with what mass unemployment allows right now. So there's a maximum benefit. I believe it's $850, what you just said. And then it's capped out at that, but that depends on your wage that you're earning for the past three or four quarters prior to that. So it's a calculation identical to what they do for mass unemployment.
Exactly.
Does that help?
And the company that I work for is about 400 employees nationwide.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just as a reminder, I recall from when Aaron was here previously, the idea of what's starting right now is to build a bank, that this cannot be utilized until January 2021. Is that correct?
Yes. And I think, so that can't be utilized till January 2021. That's the personal leave, the family portion of the medical leave. I don't think it can start till July 1st of 2021. There is guidance on there on what you can do now and who can take what, but we believe there'll be a lot more guidance provided, and they'll square out a lot more things as we get closer to that date. But they are trying to establish a bank. And I was actually on the phone with the state today, and I realized why they started it of the fourth quarter of this year, because EMAC penalties for employers, you might be familiar with this, that they have sunset this fourth quarter of 2019. So they're trying to get more money in the bank, literally. So.
Now, what is, if for those of us who don't know, what is the EMAC, if you will?
Oh, that's another fun thing. So January 1st of 2018, they put a penalty on employers if you had six employees or more, and any of your employees were on any type of subsidized health care. So that includes MassHealth, or if they went in the connector and they signed up for insurance, and it was subsidized. Even employees that signed up on the connector didn't even know it was subsidized. It is in the background. So it's up to a $750 penalty per employee per year for each employee that's on the subsidized health care. So that was a way of kind of just filling up the fund for the MassHealth, because they mandated health insurance and they got everybody on this Commonwealth Care and MassHealth, and then they ran out of money.
They didn't realize how popular it would be, or that folks would actually sign up and be a part of it. That they it was that many people without medical insurance.
Yes. And what happened was, employers found out that MassHealth was better than, I mean, I'm an employer, I offer health insurance, and MassHealth is better than the insurance plans I'm able to offer my employees. So if you can afford it or go onto the connector and get something, then employers are pushing it. So
what are some of the things that you are being asked to date in the past couple of weeks leading up to today in regards to getting prepared. What are some of the things, questions you've been answering? Your company has been answering.
Well, I think people are finally starting to realize this. This is actually a new thing. It's actually happening tomorrow. It's more of just, they're just really confused about the employee counts, who's responsible for what, and the subcontractor thing is really confusing. Like I said, we have a lot of contractor clients, so that's really the bulk of it. And just, I think the percentages are really confusing for a good reason, because they are.
See, I would wonder if it would be even more confusing for someone who has a restaurant. How confusing is that? What are the details like to try to figure that out?
Well, it's funny. We actually have a restaurant on the Cape, and as of last week, we work with a really good attorney in Quincy, and she was helping us with the legislature too, and this is brand new information to her. They actually changed how you determine your count to how many employees you have as of last week, and how you're supposed to do it is count how many employees were paid each pay period, add it up, and then take the average of pay periods of last year. If you run a business, it's really difficult to do. And we have a restaurant, and they switch payroll companies in the middle of the year, and usually when you switch a payroll company, you only get quarterly reports. So they are, right now what we're counting is like 26.5 employees. So that's one of my challenges, because I got to get the actual numbers here. I don't want to just assume they're 25 or more just based on some information I got. But that restaurants are hard. Then they also changed the employment length requirements. So
but you're also talking the wages is vastly different, and they rely on tips. How do you calculate that?
It doesn't. It's all just based on
numbers.
It's just a percentage of gross revenue, so a gross income. Yep.
Well, another factor that has to be factored into this, restaurants have huge amounts of vendors. This is another part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to automotive industry. Yeah. Are those vendors considered subcontractors because they buy from them?
So typically what you do is go off IRS for guidelines for subcontractors. Suppliers, like food suppliers, those really aren't considered subcontractors. But if you have someone, like we have some entertainment people, restaurants that provide a lot of entertainment, usually that's quite a few entertainers, musicians that come in.
Sure.
So that's a problem. But typically if they're just providing food as the vendor, then that they don't have to be 1099 at all. So that's not a thing. So that's kind of like if a builder was buying just materials only, then you wouldn't have to 1099 them. However, with builders, the problem is a lot of, I don't know if you guys have ever done some house improvements, but you get a quote from a builder, and it's usually the whole job. They usually don't break out materials. That's because they usually probably gross it up. You now have to withhold tax on that whole amount, even though it includes materials, because the builder is probably not going to break it down. So that's one of the problems there. But it's just kind of a hairy.
Well, I have another question, yeah. Aaron, and this is for, we'll say Mr. Tocci. He bought a car, and he has a favorite mechanic that he uses. So mm-hmm. let's say he uses that mechanic mm-hmm. 10 times this year. Does Mr. Tocci have to give him a 1099?
Not unless it's business purpose. Like if you were a business.
Like if I'm writing it off, if I'm writing off the expenses of him maintaining my vehicle.
So that's a little different, because that's usually auto expense. So it just goes under. It depends on your business and how you take the vehicle and all that stuff.
It's very complex.
But yes. So like if I have an accounting office, I hire someone to plow my driveway, and they do it several times, I still have to 1099 them, but I don't need to withhold the tax because they're not in the course of my business. Like they're not a bookkeeper. Do you know what I mean?
But without them plowing your driveway, mm-hmm. your course of business ceases.
That's true.
You can't get in.
Yes.
So they are part of your business.
Yeah.
Is it going to be just a matter of getting through the fourth quarter to figure out what's going to need to be tweaked by the state? And what problems you may foresee for the first year of collecting this tax?
Yeah, I think getting through the fourth quarter of 2019, I think what's going to happen is when people are really going to understand this law is around when they start getting notices. Because what happened today, actually, the state automatically issued PFML numbers if you had a withholding account. So everybody that had a mass tax connect account got that email. which in a way is good, but of course they did it the day before the law, so we had a lot of phone calls coming in about that. But usually people with this kind of law, unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is people are going to not realize it's really in existence until they start getting notices that they haven't filed something. And because if you have employees and you don't file this return, you will automatically get a notice in January of 2020. Yes.
If folks want to find out more about the PFML and what's going on, maybe they don't feel satisfied with the accounting firm they're with, how can they find out more information from Straight Line?
They can go to our website. It's straightline.com, but that's spelled kind of funny.
Yep.
StrateLign.com. We also have a lot of information on Facebook. We had a webinar last week that we put on Facebook and our website. It's just the handle is at Straight Line, Instagram, but that's really our website, and our Facebook and Instagram is pretty good ways to get in touch with us. Or call us, give us a number is 508-563-2218. We are in Plymouth, but we do a lot of virtual like video conferences, so it doesn't really matter where you are. We're always meeting with people even around the country, but obviously this is Massachusetts law, so but if you're in Boston, it's fine. Video conference works for us.
Erin, it's been great having you in once again, just to refresh folks' memories who may have seen you or heard you on different media platforms. Anything we haven't asked you but you feel is important to just remind, whether it's an employer out there or even the employees, just to be aware of?
I just want to make sure all the employers got their form signed today for their employees. They need those forms are on our website. And then the first check date is the date you start withholding. So if your check date's this Friday for last week, it's actually effective this Friday is when you have to start withholding. So that's, some people don't understand that.
And will there be a notation on your, like on your pay stub for FICA and for state? Will you be able to see what's being taken out, what the bank is for yourself personally, or not really?
Yeah, if you don't, you probably should get a different payroll company. Right. So yes, it should show with FICA, federal, Mass, yeah.
Uh-huh. Very good. All right. Yes. Erin Andrews, our guest here to start out the show, president of Straight Line, an accounting firm located in Plymouth, as she already gave out the information. Her website, Straight Line, StrateLign.com is the way to go. Thank you so much. Let's try to have you back in maybe before the end of the year. Yeah. And do a little bit of a recap as to where things stand.
Yeah, thank you. This is great.
Sounds like a plan.
I like coming on. Thank you.
Okay, let's step aside just for a couple of moments. When we come back, we're going to speak with the Norfolk County Sheriff. Jerry is going to be in joining us, Jerry McDermott. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Over-medicating chronic health issues can be an issue of its own. The time has come for efficient, plant-based remedies formulated specifically for you. Join the millions of other Americans who have found relief thanks to CBD oil. Your CBD store on Route 53 in Hanover has award-winning CBD-based products targeted for use in pain management, anxiety, depression, nausea, insomnia, and seizures. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. However, there's a lot of misinformation about CBD. Before you make a decision, you should learn all the facts. There is absolutely no marijuana in products sold by your CBD store of Hanover. Find a better way to treat your chronic conditions. Visit a trusted resource with award-winning products. Your CBD store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD store of Hanover. Help without the high.
This Saturday afternoon, South Shore High School football coverage continues on WATD. as the Plymouth North Eagles take on the Whitman Hanson Panthers. Hear every play as it happens live this Saturday afternoon with pregame starting at 3:15. Brought to you by Quirk Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Sigma Mechanical Services, DJ Sullivan Collision Center, Conway Insurance, Rockland Athletic Supply, and the South Shore's home for local high school sports, 95.9 WATD. Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are transitioning from Aaron answering some last-minute questions. The sheriff is like, oh, no. Everybody's kind of caught up in this new
FL. Yeah. Family Medical Leave Act.
Yeah, it's so fantastic. Fun. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Formally. Great to be here.
Would you like to say welcome too?
Oh, most certainly. It's always good to have a sheriff with us.
Good to see you, Bob.
One of these days, we could get both you and Joe McDonald in together.
Oh, that'd be great.
W.
Sheriff Joe and I are both huge Elvis Presley fans.
Really? So it's funny you say that because he actually gave me. He's got a couple of little trinkets that he's given me. Yeah. I don't know if it was a keychain.
I bet it was a keychain.
Yeah.
There's a replica of the badge that sheriff that was given out by the what's the name of the county down there in Memphis? The county sheriff bestowed that on Elvis Presley, and Sheriff Joe McDonald of Plymouth makes up these neat little replicas.
Yeah.
And he already gave me one, and he'd be ashamed now that I don't remember the name of the county down in. Out of Tennessee.
So what made you become an Elvis fan?
You know, being the youngest of 10 kids growing up, I just had the benefit of having all that vinyl around my house. So from Elvis, you know, even the oldies, the 50s, all that stuff was left behind. As my oldest siblings moved out, they left behind their records, which was great because I inherited them all. So
there you go. That doesn't get any better than that, Kevin.
Bill Haley and the Comets, Rock Around the Clock, you name it.
See, with me, my mom and dad, loved Elvis. I can remember a couple of times being loaded into the Dodge Polara, driving down to Memphis, standing in those long, hot lines across the way from the plaza. There were all the Elvis Presley stores. When Elvis died, four or five months, my mother did nothing but listen to Elvis movies, watch Elvis, listen to the music, watch the movies, adorn the house with anything that was Elvis-like. So,
yeah, my mom loved Elvis movies, and Elvis music is still. I torture my kids at Christmas. I've got all the Christmas ornaments that when you press the
blue
button,
Christmas.
It'll play blue. Yeah.
There you go.
They're like, enough, Dad. You don't sound anything like them.
We'd have to do Elvis trivia with you and Sheriff McDonald.
That'd be great.
That'd be fantastic. But that's not why we have you here. You have this fantastic new program. Fantastic. It's I don't want to call it fantastic, but in the sense is you're looking to try to get to the bottom of folks who are missing.
Yes.
People wanted for crimes, unsolved crimes, and you've done it using playing cards. Where did the concept come from?
Well, sure, Kevin. I remember back about 2010, 2011, probably the beginning of 2011, a gentleman came into the office of U.S. Senator Scott Brown. I was former Senator Brown's state director, and I happened to be going out as this gentleman was coming in. And one of the college interns was just doing their job. This gentleman did not have an appointment. He wanted to see the senator. He was told the senator's in Washington, D.C., wanted to get some information. And I said, excuse me, I could see the gentleman seemed kind of frazzled, so I asked if I could help. Long story short, this gentleman, Dave McClellan, God rest his soul, I found out recently that he passed, but Dave McClellan was a Massachusetts resident whose son was finding his way, had dropped out of college, gone down to New Orleans, was bartending, and long story short, he fell in with some guys that dealt pot. He said, look, my son's no saint. He used to smoke his pot, drink his beers, but basically some of the people he knew from the restaurant down in New Orleans stabbed him for his tip money because bartenders got tipped out so well. He never got any justice, but I befriended him, and over the years, he would stay in touch with me over the months. We'd go over to the Peace Garden in Boston, and he showed me where his son's stone was. And one day he comes into the office with a deck of playing cards. And I thought, what a novel idea. And he explained to me that down in Baton Rouge in New Orleans, they had so many unsolved murders, they had to come up with something. Fast forward to when I was appointed by Governor Charlie Baker back in December 22nd. I never forgot that idea. I began talking to some of the other sheriffs about it. And to a sheriff, they all said, good idea. Let's see how it works. So they're supportive. They want to see how well it works as kind of a pilot program in Norfolk County. But again, what it is unsolved murders, missing persons, some serial criminals, whether it's breaking and entering, shoplifting, that kind of thing. We put them on a deck of cards, and our inmates have a lot of downtime, as you would imagine. So during their recreation time, they play cards anyway. Now they'll only be given these decks of cards. So it may trigger them when they see a face of a missing person to say, I know something about that. And if it's just one little nugget, one piece of the puzzle, we can give that information to the Norfolk County District Attorney, Morrissey, and just see, you know, is that something that helps solve this case? You know, could bring closure to a family that's been waiting all these years, or solve a crime of somebody who's been wanted and has been slippery. We haven't been able to apprehend them yet.
I think it's a fabulous thing, Kevin. I thought when he handed me the cards, we were going to be playing poker or something.
Ronnie, hey, I know this guy.
I looked at the faces. I think that they should be giving those out at Encore, the casino. You might find some people that are going to be looking at the cards.
You think so?
I just looked through. There was robbery suspect, murder suspect, people that were missing.
Yeah, there's a ton of... It's sad. There's a number of missing people in there. And some of those, I remember, you know, going back years and years. The woman who kind of broke up the ring at Logan Airport, where she knew some of the baggage handlers might have been taking things out of suitcases. She was found in the trunk of her car. But they never solved that crime. The parents used to pay for billboards to be put up. So again, it's trying to find closure, trying to solve a piece of the puzzle. And from the amount of time it took for the printer to get those playing cards back to us at the jail, we had already, in our care and custody, had the seven of diamonds is in our care and custody. So we'll have to pull him from the deck. We're actually working with the printer now to say we might not need a new run of 52 cards, but we probably need 10 fairly quickly for cases that have been being solved.
By the cards?
No, not just by the cards, but actually in the amount of time, because it took probably a month and a half from the mock-up to the actual printing to getting the cards. So, you know, kudos to law enforcement for being out there and being vigilant. The cards are based on the mass most wanted. So we could just go on that website and download, another 52. We could have new cards all the time.
And I was going to ask you that. Is there a thought or maybe a plan to have a regular series? So you could have a series two, a series three, and it would feature different individuals, different folks who are part of unsolved crime, stuff like that?
Absolutely. So 52 cards in a deck, we can probably refresh these every 6 months. Would probably be fine. And some of them we'll have to pull out sooner than that, but I think every 6 months. They're not that expensive. It's less than $4 a deck. And so far, so good. You know, nobody likes to talk about it, but in every jail across the country, there's informants, right? That's how you get intel. Every major police department has informants on the street, people they work with to get intelligence gathered from them. So while we don't want our inmates to be thinking, hey, I'm playing cards and I could be playing with somebody who's going to rat me out or snitch, you couldn't do this job otherwise. And we get some great actionable intelligence from what goes on inside the jail, and they all love to talk. So if you're calling in to the House of Corrections, it'll say, if you're an attorney, you know, this line is being recorded. If you're an attorney, hang up and call back on this other line. Our inmates know that. Their family members know that. But yet they still talk all the time, and they give up such information to our internal affairs guys. We're sharing that with the Norfolk County DA as it is, and we've stopped a lot of drugs from coming into the jail, because people who are doing petty crimes, they might know they're going to Quincy District Court and the judge is going to send them. They'll go load up on drugs. They'll actually put it in plastic and swallow it, or put it in wax. It gets worse. Sometimes they'll pack it somewhere on their body.
Goodness.
Yep. And as much as drugs are worth on the street, you could triple it in jail. So my second month on the job, we had a guy who tried to load up on Suboxone, $18,000 jail value. And we had to put him on a dry cell protocol, wait for him to pass it,
sure,
if you will, and then
sure,
retrieve it. Not a pleasant job, but you know, that's how you stop drugs from coming in. But that intelligence that we hear on the phone calls, yeah, it's helping a lot.
It's gold.
Yeah, it's gold. And we're hoping with the deck of cards, somebody may see something, not want to report it maybe, but on the phone they might say to their girlfriend or their mom, hey, I was playing cards today and, you know, so-and-so who I used to run with,
yes,
he better be careful because they're looking for him.
Yeah, we're speaking with Norfolk County Sheriff Jerry McDermott. Is there a thought to distribute these cards outside of the jail, or do you feel that it's more effective just to keep them in-house for now?
Great question, Kevin. So we started in-house, but every month the Norfolk County police chiefs meet. And so I gave a deck of cards to each of the chiefs. Some of them asked for more than one deck. They're going to have them around at the police stations, which makes total sense because they're usually the first ones to come in contact with the apprehension. And oftentimes, some of the smaller police departments within the 28 communities that make up Norfolk County, they may not have the cell space, especially if they've got a long weekend, if they've had a lot of calls. They'll say to us at the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office, can you take these people as safe keeps? That way, it saves them money, right? They're not paying a lot of overtime to keep folks there in their basement usually. And they don't have the cell space again. So we've got the medical team. We've got the mental health, behavioral health team. We do care, custody, and control. That's what we do at the Sheriff's Office. So working hand in hand with the 28 police chiefs and 28 police departments, we find by giving them the deck of cards, they may have first touch, first contact with these people who are wanted. So it's great. You know, it's kind of a constant refresher.
Do you find that you have a more success when it comes to the unsolved crimes as opposed to someone who's missing?
So far, it seems to be the people that are wanted.
Okay.
You know, those are fresher cases. Sadly, those people have been missing for decades. You don't want to call them a cold case, but it's so tough. You know, D.A. Morrissey spoke about one case where, you know, you're talking, you know, 3 decades have gone by.
Sure.
And how do you keep control of all the evidence? Sometimes, in one case, the people who first were in possession of blood or other evidence, they've passed on. So there's kind of a break in the chain of who's been working the case. But, yeah, we're very hopeful. It's actually working, Kevin, in Rhode Island, South Carolina, and Louisiana. And I think there may be some other states that are doing it. So we'll see how it goes in Norfolk County. If it goes well, I think Sheriff Joe McDonald in Plymouth and others will probably replicate this program.
Something you want to ask as a follow-up while we have a couple of months left here?
Kevin, I'm just amazed. I think it's a great program, but the wheels in my head are turning, thinking maybe on a local cable show we should be running a monthly show on Most Wanted in Plymouth County,
sure,
Most Wanted in Norfolk County. Could use your cards or any type of pictures and premiere a show that just says, this person, this person, this person, monthly, call-ins.
Yeah. That would work, absolutely. And what we're finding, in talking with D.A. Morrissey, we were talking about some impact players. They might run in Suffolk County. They may run in Norfolk County, and they may also be running in Plymouth County. So, you know, if you looked at some of the hot spots, for example, Brockton in Plymouth County,
mm-hmm,
Randolph in Norfolk County, Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan in Suffolk, you'll find guys that may have done time in each of those houses of corrections in each of those counties. And they may have family or they may have some gang affiliation. But if we kind of triangulate around those areas, work with the 3 DAs in those counties, work with the 3 sheriffs, you know, we may be able to solve a lot of the hotspot crimes that are happening.
Sheriff, anything we haven't asked you, we've got just a couple of moments left here. Anything we haven't asked you in regards to this program that's helping you solve some crimes?
Sure. So we just launched it, and I'd have to put on my glasses to give you the anonymous tip line, but it's right on the back of the the deck of cards there.
781.
751. 751.
3408.
3408. So if people do want to help out, if they know something about an unsolved crime, even without seeing the deck of cards, sometimes people just, their conscience gets to them over the years. They don't want to carry it with them to their grave, and they want to step up to the plate and be helpful. So, no, it's a great program. We're kind of excited about it. We had a great turnout for the initial press conference launch. We had about 14 out of the 28 police chiefs there present. So they're very excited about it, too. And DM Morrissey is excited about it, too. So we'll see how well it goes. And then, who knows, every county, there's 14 county sheriffs, as well as the State Department of Corrections prison system, these may be distributed, and hopefully we'll bring some people to justice.
How important is it to get that kind of support, that you have folks from law enforcement coming together and supporting it, even if it's something that's a minor deck of cards?
It's huge. We really look at the county sheriff's offices as kind of a true partner with all law enforcement. And our corrections officers are often kind of the unsung heroes, if you will. You know, you think of police, we think of our firefighters, we think of EMS. A lot of times people forget when somebody is sentenced and they go to jail that the care, custody, and control 24/7 is those corrections officers. So if I can give one plug, it's
please
if
do.
Anyone knows any corrections officers out there, give them a thank you. Give them a that a boy, that a girl when you see them. You know, we are great as a community, as a commonwealth, of thanking our police and fire. Sometimes corrections officers are forgotten, but they are so vitally important and underpaid. We're fighting now for some legislation that would bring a county corrections officer's pay up to where the State Department of Corrections officer's pay should be. And, you know, it's not big money, but it's so vitally important.
The only thing you have to worry about is the paid family
medical leave act.
How they can, you may get it up a peg, but it might come down, you know, a quarter of a peg.
Yeah, well, that's why we thought the right thing to do. All the mass sheriffs said, let's pick up the cost of it, at least for the first year until you go into the next round of contract negotiations. Mm-hmm. It's only fair because, again, they don't get paid a lot, and this is yet another pinch out of their payroll. So we didn't think that was right.
Sheriff, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Kevin.
Let's have you back in.
Love to.
I definitely have to team you up with Sheriff McDonald.
That'd be great.
And have you guys have a conversation and kind of compare and contrast in regards to sheriff's departments and some of the likenesses. And again, even throw out some Elvis trivia as well.
Yeah, Sheriff Joe has been great. He has been a mentor and a friend, and can't say enough good things about Sheriff Joe McDonald.
We want to thank you so much for coming
in. Thanks, Kevin.
Appreciate it. Having you back.
Thank you, Bob.
That's going to conclude the first hour. Great first hour. Hoping for the same success in the second hour. Coming up in a few moments, Jeffrey from Brennan's, as well as Karen. Talk a little bit about the bait band. Coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You are listening to Monday Night Talk.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back here on Monday Night Talk, second hour of the radio program. Coming up at 7:40, we will speak with Doreen A. Lang, author of Putting Differences to Work. Volume 2 of Hanging On to Your Stars. We'll also speak with Mr. Hayes, so Whitman-Hanson Regional School Committee Chair. First, we speak with Jeffrey Yalanesian from Brennan's, and Karen Brennan Montana.
Yes.
Karen is going to, you said you're going to be kind of just hanging in the background. Jeffrey will probably do some of the, but yes, you might chime in here and there.
I might.
Okay. Make sure you pull the microphone just close enough in case you need it. Jeffrey, how are you?
Good.
It's been, here we are with day 5.
I hope I just, can I start with, I grew up in Hingham, so I was a harborman, but I graduated in Whitman-Hanson from Whitman. I didn't graduate, I almost graduated from Whitman-Hanson, so, but I consider myself a Panther.
And you're also a little bit of a pugilist, right? Don't you hang out at the South Shore Boxing Club?
South Shore Boxing Club, Whitman, Mass.
Oh, you've had...
Still there, Regal Shoe Factory.
Yeah. How you doing?
Yeah, I've seen better days. So I wanted Mom to come to this, Kev, because I really... she's been so important to me and the rest of my family for so long, and she's so smart, and I really, really... value her opinion and what she has to say, because she kind of boils it down and simplifies things, and she also has a wealth of experience. I think we both do, but when we talk about business and how long you've been in business, we don't really talk about how long I've been in the business, because I was just a little person when you could work in your mother's smoke shop, so you can't anymore, so we don't want to elaborate on that. But I have also a wealth of experience in the business. I've been doing this in the business, around the business, since I was a little guy, so I've seen a lot of changes. But I think we should ask my mom, what do you think of this vape ban? What do you think about it?
I'm in shock. I cannot believe that with a swipe of a pen that our governor can put those businesses out of business. It's a legal product. It was declared a legal product under the Tobacco
Control Act.
And if people are using it illicitly, I don't understand why the vape shops are closed. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, your business has been fighting against the push to legislate flavored e-juice, right? I mean, is that accurate?
We'd like the market to be in age-controlled stores.
Right, but the idea, but you've been one of the ones on the front line fighting against, you equate it to flavored alcohol and...
Ice cream.
Fast food. Per se. Is this a preemptive strike as for tougher legislation when it comes to...
You didn't hear my latest sentence, so I was...
I kind of did.
Did you? I was
kind of did, but for the folks at home who haven't, if I can get Ben's attention real quick here. Ben, can you play Jeffrey's greatest ad?
The newest. So it's very thought-provoking. And there may be something
The truth
there.
Is, these high tobacco tax states are losing big money and revenue to the vape industry. These governors are trapped between the Public Health Committee, the Revenue Committee, and shrinking coffers. We all know this has nothing to do with public health, but everything to do with that almighty dollar. Martha Coakley classified e-juice as a tobacco product years ago. Now all you gotta do is pass a bill. I'm calling on the House and the Senate to regulate this unregulated e-juice market.
Brennan Smoke Shop.
So I'm getting a Liberal Lion-esque feel to your voice trait in that. Am I wrong here?
A little bit.
Without naming names. Mom got it.
I grew up listening to
I know
that. So
I know.
We know in the business that the big money maker for the Commonwealth is cigarettes. And we've watched, since the vape industry has come along, we've watched our cigarette sales and other tobacco product sales decline at a consistent rate. So if we're losing money, we know the state's losing money.
So I would ask you this, and that is you're somebody who, you're fortunate enough, and I don't know if fortunate is the right word, but you don't solely rely on selling vape products.
No.
You have multiple products that you can offer for tobacco, cigars.
We've always been a tobacco store.
I get that, but I know that you've added the vape or the e-juice. How is this affecting you, and have you had a chance to speak to anybody else in the industry?
We didn't add the vape. The vape was always a part of the tobacco business.
Okay.
And the vape business is going to flip out over that, but listen, it's the truth. We were like one of the first retailers in Massachusetts selling vape before any vape stores. Vape originally came along because it was considered a alternative for when you couldn't smoke a traditional combustible cigarette, like on a plane or in the library or at a show, or really you can't smoke anywhere anymore, so anywhere you were. But the other thing about the vape is it's so discreet. Even if I did hit it on a plane in a library,
Nobody would know. Nobody knows.
And that's the danger with the minors, is you just don't know they're using it. You can't see it. It's there.
Do you want to chime in on this?
I'm not sure if everybody knows. I mean, you touched on it in your ad, and I never knew because I don't smoke. But how much does the state charge tax per pack for cigarettes?
It's now $3.50 a pack.
So every pack of cigarettes that gets sold, the state gets $3.50.
Yeah.
And how much is your average package of cigarettes?
Over $10. $10 or plus.
So if someone smokes two packs a day, it's $20 a day, $140 a week.
Now, contrast to the vape industry, I can buy a bottle of vape juice for $10 and it lasts weeks. The one bottle of vape juice lasts weeks. I don't even have to think about buying cigarettes because as long as I have juice.
It's interesting. I myself, a former smoker, 20 plus years, when it climbed to close to $3, I threw my hands up. I said, I'm done. I quit for about a year, and then I started back up. And at the time, my son, who was, 10, 11 years old, gave me the old guilt trip. Dad, it bothers me that you smoke. I want you to be around. I quit like that. On top of it being $3, and I was somebody who smoked two packs a day, and I just smoked to smoke. I liked smoking, but I could smoke up to three packs a day without even trying. But then it comes down to, you know, can I breathe? Can I afford it? And then having my young son say to me, well,
it's an unintended consequence, as the Sheriff Guy Glotis wanted me to. It's unintended consequences. What's an unintended consequence of flavored soda? Cavities, too much sugar. Unintended consequence of flavored ice cream, obesity. Unintended consequence of alcohol consumption, DUI accidents. You know, we keep talking about that. How many kids or young people have to smack into trees on Saturday and Friday and Saturday nights drunk before the governor says, I've had enough of this bloodshed. I'm banning the sale of alcohol in the Commonwealth.
Well, so besides a ban, what steps should the state have taken regarding the growing number of lung illnesses?
Public health.
And the fatalities that are suspected from vaping, supposedly.
I've been in this business a long time, and I don't have a degree from the School of Public Health, but I've been around a lot of those people, and I know that the price of tobacco products is consistent with minor usage. So that was always school public health. Raise the price, make it unattainable for the youth, and the rest, and usage will go down. We proposed a bill three years ago to tax vape e-juice the same way as it was a tobacco product at 40%. OTP, other tobacco product. Martha Coakley classified as a tobacco product. The state, all they had to do was tax it like a tobacco product. We had 40% proposed. It came out of the Revenue Committee. They gutted it. They made it 20%, a separate e-juice tax, and they wanted 20% so they had somewhere to go. But again, they did nothing. So from somebody that's in the business and has been around this stuff for a long time, it's not about the health effects. I mean, if it was really about that, I mean, we would have banned alcohol consumption a long time ago, right? I mean, how many kids got a smack in the trees? Think about this, Kevin. Last year, a drunk state trooper hit another state trooper on the highway. You know, we're losing highly trained state troopers on the side of the highways to drunk drivers in the breakdown lanes. So it's like, how big of a problem is this vape? I mean, it's like, you know, and we know it's from illicit black market THC cartridges that were cut with vitamin E, and it creates peroxycyanide poisoning.
And you're saying that this is something that's well known within the industry, but the government itself, whether it's the federal or state government, is slow to grasp these results and at least quantify that's what the problem is?
I think that the minor usage of e-juice wouldn't be as big a problem today if the legislature passed a bill to tax it 3 years ago. And you take that $10 bottle of e-juice and you now make it, you know.
E-juice is the vape product?
Yeah.
Because I'm not familiar with it.
Now you have two different things. Now the Juul is what's called a salt-based nic. And the bioteric acid that they use to blend with the nicotine affects the body in a way that makes it absorb the nicotine faster. And that's why people enjoy the pod systems better, because it gives you more of a sensation that you're actually smoking a cigarette. The other option is the vegetable glycerin, or VG juice, which is the nicotine mixed with vegetable glycerin that goes into like those big grenade-looking vape tanks. But the industry has consistently changed over the years. We kind of knew it was going to change. So when you say we brought the vape in, we've always sold vape. We didn't go all in the vape because we've always been a tobacco store. So we kind of just danced around it and offered what people were buying. So when we were doing VG vape, and that changed, we moved on to the pods and the salt-based nic. But always, since vape was vape, carding people and treating it as though it was a tobacco product. We didn't even know. You didn't have to be 18 to buy it, because e-juice is not a tobacco product, because it doesn't come from tobacco. That's what we were that's what we understood.
Right.
But we still, it was illicit, and we carded people. So, I mean, it needs to be taxed, and it needs to be in age-controlled stores.
Well, that's the big that's, I think, a problem, is whether it's something that you want to lend a conversation into. And I don't know if I want to go down this path, because the idea was just to kind of talk about the ban without cutting into time, although I don't have a problem with not discussing the controversy brewing in the towns of Whitman and Hanson about the town assessments and how those communities are going to be budgeting in the future. But I've heard people talk about, and it's, I think people have a fear that e-juice and vaping are fast becoming something that our younger folks are getting involved with, and they're doing it faster than they did with cigarettes, supposedly. And I don't know how accurate that is, so you're welcome to refute that information.
No, I have to agree with you. I am also a non-smoker, smoked for a long time, gave it up a long time ago, still prefer premium cigars. And I was 16 when I got permission. Back then, you got permission.
Yeah.
I remember my mother telling me, as long as I wasn't on the street corner, you could have permission to smoke in the house. I think Yes, the young people are picking it up rapidly. If they did it the way it was directed, I don't think we'd be not to say that it's good for them, it's not good for them. But if they used it the way it was directed and intended, we wouldn't have the issues that we're having right now. I think they're going online, they're getting illicit THC cartridges. Not just the youth. I specifically know some older people that are going online and getting the THC cartridges because it's less expensive. A lot less expensive than the legal recreation.
I had to buy an illicit one myself because literally they banned the good ones. And I'll tell you something, the illicit cartridges are junk. Don't waste
garbage.
Money. When he lifts this ban, go to the dispensary and
but people aren't doing that.
Is there any fear, though, that with this ban that it could wipe out majority of those people who invested solely in vape and vape products?
They're going to go online. You're talking about just
mean the usage?
I'm talking about the businesses have the dedicated shops. Is it going to...
Absolutely.
They can't go a day without sales, let alone a month.
No, the governor has really put them out of business.
And listen, the state, what is the state care? They're making 6.25% sales tax on what they sell, and they're probably not even making that because they're probably not recording all their sales. It's all under the table cash. But listen, seriously, I mean, either the state doesn't care. They're not losing anything.
If
the
state, product online.
3 years ago, if the state passed the bill to tax it like other tobacco products, they wouldn't have banned it. Why would they ban it? They're making 40% on it. It was really easy for him to sign that. What does he care? He's going to go home at night in his nice, big, shiny house. You know? Kids are going to eat.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Yelenesian and Karen Brennan Fontana talking a little bit about the vape ban. Are we talking about, is there a lawsuit? Are we seeing legal action that's going to be brewing?
I don't think he can.
Or is it David versus Goliath?
He issued a state of emergency. I don't think that legally there's much recourse against that. He had just cause. I mean, there is.
But how do you stop? You basically said they can illicitly You can buy it and have it shipped to your house.
The ban doesn't cover the e-juice getting shipped into the state. They can't stop that.
Or you can have it shipped to your house.
The ban only stops the companies in the state of Massachusetts.
From brick and mortar shipping it out.
So all this stuff that I'm looking at, if I got a buyer for it in Connecticut, I can't ship it to them and get it off of my hands. I mean, everybody's looking at millions and millions. Because
you've been told you along with many of the other take it off the shelf.
The Board of Health come into my store in Taunton, went behind my counter and started taking my product off of my shelves. I'm like, no, listen, you don't come behind my counter. That's not your job. It says here in your order, if we don't comply, you can write us a fine. Don't come behind my counter again. Cops going around taking stuff. It's like disgusting. It's despicable. Charlie Baker, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
What? But do you think it's just Charlie, though? It's not just Charlie.
No.
While he's the person who spoke and said, we're doing this.
Because he can. But I think it's the Public Health Commission that's bending his ear. And I'm not going to dispute the fact that we have a problem.
I think it's the Revenue Committee. Personally, I think it's money.
But what do you say about New York and Michigan, who actually, they were the first
ones? When I started telling you about this, was last night, and I realized that the governor of Washington signed a bill. And I thought about Washington, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. What are the states?
Virginia, New York, New Jersey.
I can't hear you.
Virginia, New York, New Jersey.
Virginia's not a high tax state, but New York is, New Jersey is, Rhode Island is, Massachusetts is, Washington is. These are all high tax states, and I'm sure they are feeling the effects of the vape industry sapping their coffers and their tobacco tax revenue. I'm positive, because everybody knows it's illicit THC vape cartridges. Why would you ban a product and force the whole market in Massachusetts onto illicit sites? We know it's THC cartridges, but who knows about the e-juice? I mean, who knows?
Jeff, I guess I'm just sitting here taking this in, and I don't do any of the above. Don't smoke, don't do vape. Are you saying that by banning vape increases sales on cigarettes?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a guy, I had a young man, I should say, because he's younger than me, but he wasn't that young. I had a young man came in, didn't even know about the ban. He was trying to buy his R.J. Reynolds Alto vape. And we said, you can't buy it. He goes, what do you mean? We said, the governor banned it. He goes, I didn't know. And we said, yeah, you're not going to be able to buy it anywhere. And anybody sells you that, they're crazy. And he goes, can I have a pack of L&M Light 100s? Right there in front of me. So absolutely, 100%.
So if you drive over the border of any of the other states that's not banned in, can you walk in and buy it?
Yeah. And I'll tell you something else. The state of New Hampshire just increased their legal age to buy tobacco. Does anybody want to guess what it was?
Oh, yeah.
25?
19. You know why? 19. They want to make sure that the young adults from Massachusetts can skip
just
over the border.
Did that.
New Hampshire's kicking their heels all the way to the bank. They have been for 20 years.
So I believe Ben has a quick question. Ben?
I mean, your guys' thoughts on this, because I was having this conversation, of course, with many other people that have a lot of stake in this.
Your microphone isn't working. Come over here. Just talk into the microphone.
No problem. So your guys' thoughts on this, not only is this obviously...
Before you ask the question, are you a consummate vapor?
I can't say that I'm a vapor, but I do enjoy the Juuls as a replacement to the old tobacco. Nothing for nothing.
An alternative. Exactly. Harm reduction, not harmless.
Absolutely. I agree with you. But there was also some conversation going along that this is also tied into back in the 90s when that big tobacco tax was introduced and they ended up having to pay
the
billions.
MSA.
What about all that different money that was promised?
They're going to lose. I think they were going to revitalize the MSA so they continue to get the money. That's what Ben's talking about is them. $900 million that the state of Massachusetts gets from the Master Settlement Agreement when the people of the United States of America sued the cigarette manufacturers. They've had to pay percentages of their sales for the past, 20 years? So that's actually ending. They're going to lose that MSA money, funding, and what is it, $900 million?
Well, that was the problem with it. Some of the conversations I was happening to hear was a lot of these towns took those calculations from back in the 90s based on, they were getting paid based off the revenue percentages of the tobacco industry.
That mic's not working, Ben.
Sorry, that microphone stinks.
Give me that.
We keep trying to, no, it's all right, All right, but you got to make sure you speak into it, because again, we can't assume that folks at home can actually hear what you're saying. I can hear you. They can, but what I care about, either the millions of people at home who are listening who care about this issue. So, go ahead.
Absolutely, as they should. So anyway, one of the reasons this might be happening is if you ban the e-juice and the Juuls and all that other stuff, what's that going to do? People are going to have to either choose to stop completely or go back to the tobacco industry altogether again, which is going to bump those revenues, which is going to get that money flowing
Ben,
again.
Aside from the state losing the MSA money, aside from that, forget about the MSA money. They're just going to lose their everyday tobacco tax revenue is plummeting.
The excise tax.
The floor is dropping out. And I've been saying it for years. You guys better figure something out. And it looks like the weed came along at just the right time because that revenue...
When you say you guys, who do you mean by you guys?
I mean
you guys?
Us in the Commonwealth.
Okay.
Us. We.
I'm just going to clarify.
It's a good thing we got the THC thing going because... That tax revenue is going to replace the lost revenue in tobacco tax. It's going to happen. Tobacco is going to be history in 30 years, if not less. So it's really, we're both in awe because of, we didn't know a governor could just put you out of business with the swipe of a pen. I mean, that's...
I get what you're saying where he was the one who, I think it was the governor meeting with public health officials.
Again,
and ultimately, I know. But I got to make sure I put things in perspective.
Yeah.
That this was a meeting. They've seen what's been going on, not only here in in Massachusetts.
They used it as an excuse.
Last I knew that it had climbed over 60 people had illness, lung illness, that they were suspecting that it had something to do with e-juice or vaping. But we had no deaths. We had no deaths that I had known of. Okay.
I mean, how far reaching are these?
But as far as around the country, it's a bigger deal because the numbers are growing.
So what you know is whoever's distributing the illicit vape cartridges is a major distributor of illicit vape cartridges.
Go ahead, Karen.
Say something here. As a mother, and a grandmother, and a great-grandmother now. I understand the concern for the illnesses, the lung illnesses. Mm. It's scary. I absolutely understand that. Cigarette smoking is not good for you. Vaping is, I don't think, really good for you. It might be not as harmful as cigarette smoking. Alcoholism, drinking to excess is not good for you. And again, as a mother and a grandmother and a great-grandmother, I can understand the concern. But when I read all the articles and I find out that it's illicit cartridges and that they're doing this...
They're beating up in a legal business.
Right. They're not following the directions for how it's intended to be used. That's where my problem is. And I think that more investigation should have been done before they put those vape shops out of business.
I mean, he could lift the ban tomorrow, but he won't because they don't have the legislation to tax it.
You think that's what it strictly is? It's just
I think it's about money. I do.
Jeff thinks it's about money. I do believe there are a lot of people out there that mean well. I think they might have rushed into a result here that wasn't necessarily the right one.
Bob?
I'm a little bit miffed about the whole vaping subject. So what we're saying here from a point of view, again, of a person who doesn't do either, and I think a lot of the listeners probably don't, the product that you sell, Jeff, in your store is not the product that they're seeing these big commercials on.
Right.
Those are products that are sold over the internet that are illegally made.
Probably more likely... from your local weed dealer.
Yeah, could be.
You're under the table weed dealer. Not your local dispensary, your guy down the street that sells you twice what the dispensary sells for the same price. You're getting really half as much. And that's what I've personally encountered. And I actually stopped consuming that product. But when it became legal and I could go right down the street from my house and purchase it, I kind of started like... buying vape cartridges, buying just because it was cool. And so literally 2 days before the ban, somebody I know said, hey, I got these cartridges off of somebody else, and I know you buy the ones from the dispensary. Can you tell me if these are any good? So I got one, and so I didn't get one from the dispensary. And literally 2 days later, the ban was enacted, and I'm stuck with this illicit black market or gray market vape cartridge that literally does nothing. It does nothing.
Hmm.
So a word to...
Buyer beware.
Buyer beware.
Buyer beware.
Just because it's twice as big doesn't mean it's twice as much.
Would you guys be interested in fielding a phone call? Any interest at all?
Sure.
Okay, so we have...
I got to put headphones on.
We have Jack from Abington on the line. Jack, welcome to the show.
How are you? Thanks for taking the call.
What's your question or comment?
Well, comment is, maybe it's a question, but I haven't heard much talk about how vaping came to be such a crisis. It seems that, to me, it all came about roughly 20 years ago when they passed the law that, there was a no-smoking ban in restaurants and public places. And it seemed like local governments were trying to legislate people's behavior and saying it was all in, a health concern because of secondhand smoke and all of that. And so what happened, it seems to me that vaping stepped into the void and said, well, we're not a tobacco product. We don't have the tar and doesn't cause the secondhand smoke. And so it's like local governments created this crisis by... them trying to legislate behavior. Do you agree?
I think that the vape industry became a thing because of it sprouted from the tobacco industry because people were getting fed up because they couldn't use their traditional tobacco products anyway, so they came up with this other alternative.
It's bastardized. I mean, again, absolutely. you look at...
So it was really the tobacco industry that drove the vape industry.
When I was growing up, you could be in a pub, you could be in an eatery, you could be on a plane.
Hospital.
You're in a hospital. You go anywhere and you could smoke. Slowly, though, there have been ordinances and things put in place to basically kind of give you a little corner out in the parking lot with a little ashtray.
And that's what we're used to.
Right.
We're used to that kind of legislation, the slow, steady, progressive. This is sudden and abrupt ban. It's really gross.
Mm.
So I hope we answered his question. I think
Jack, did we answer your question?
Yes, that was his question. Sorry, okay. We had to disconnect.
All right, and did you have another caller, or was that it?
There was one other caller with another question. Summarized real quick, the caller's question was, why were they so quick to act on this with such little time in between, but yet it's taken 20-plus years of fixing the heroin and the opioid epidemic? And the caller was very concerned that, again, one issue definitely worse than the other, yet one got resolved much quicker in a way.
Ask myself that question all the time.
I think the thing, it's interesting because heroin isn't new. Drugs are not new. Cocaine and heroin from the turn of the century.
This is perfect. This is another Guy Glotis greatest hits. You can't legislate morality.
If only we could have Guy here.
Yeah, really?
Oh, we got Karen.
We could have
got Mom.
We do. Mom's been fantastic. It's very nice having you here in studio, Karen Brendan Fontana, who is
nice to be
here along with Jeffrey, as we are talking about. I'm sorry, Bob, but we're gonna have to have you back in maybe.
That's okay, Kevin. I'm getting a pretty good education on the smoking industry itself and the vaping. I'm amazed. But why do you think it only went for 4 months? The governor could legislate it so they could get a bill ready.
4 months, and then we know, so what happens in 4 months? I mean, have you had Guy Glotis been in?
If they sign a bill, would be in January. That's the deadline, right? I mean, that's the deadline for my bill would be January. So that the state over the next 4 months could lose millions and millions and millions of dollars in tobacco tax revenue. I mean, they stopped the hemorrhaging really quick. That's the truth.
Hmm.
Whether or not it's, you know, what I can politic it any way you want, anyway. But
right,
the facts are the facts.
But I know we sit here and we look at, again, we talk about drugs, the drug epidemic, very real. Drugs have been around, but it crept from the urban centers and being as bad as it was. Then before heroin, we had cocaine, we had crack cocaine.
You still have it. Do you know how I got hooked on painkillers?
How? Because
the dentist. I didn't really need the painkillers when I had that tooth extracted, but he gave me the Vicodin anyway. I didn't really need it, and I know I didn't need it because I've had tooth extractions since then and just use ibuprofen. I actually can't take them anymore, right, because I have an allergic reaction to them. I get addicted really fast. But I had my vasectomy and got really scared.
You took the bridge out.
I got really scared, and I was like, oh, do I need these? And they actually wrote me a script, and I told them not to. They wrote me a script anyways, and I said, oh, do I need these? I got really scared, and I didn't take them anyways. I won't ever take them again.
But is it possible because of what we had seen, knowing that this administration was coming in on the heels of an administration that was trying to deal with the drug epidemic?
Yes, I do believe that Governor Baker means well. I really do believe he means well. He's trying to do the right thing.
This is my pessimistic mom.
His initial response was to save lives, and I know he is really affected by what the young people are doing. And it's illicit drugs. It's like you said, the cocaine, the heroin, method, you know, all of these things are illicit drugs. They need to look at what is being done illicitly. I don't know what's wrong here. Something is seriously wrong, and I don't think banning vape stores is going to fix this problem.
But is this just one domino that's went over? Again, we're talking about where Washington, Rhode Island, Massachusetts did it. New York and Michigan banned flavors.
It's like that Neiman Mohler poem about the Nazis. They came for me, and there was no one left. You know, first it's vape, then it, you know, they tried to prohibit alcohol.
First
it was alcohol.
Alcohol. They did that for a while.
That was prohibited. We said it today. It was like prohibition.
We did prohibition. It did,
we're prohibiting vape.
That's because people were sneaking around and it generated the bootleggers.
And this is going to do exactly the same thing. We are repeating history over and over and over again.
We didn't learn the first
instead of fixing the problem.
That's why we haven't banned alcohol.
Maybe the solution is to make it all legal, educate, and put it out there and
trying to legislate morality.
And let people make their own choices. Educate the kids in school.
I don't know if you know this, Kevin.
Like you said, your son.
Let mom finish.
Sorry.
Your son said to you, he made you feel guilty when you were smoking cigarettes.
He did.
So a lot of people quit because of that, because the kids were coming home because they were told these horror stories. You're going to die. You're going to die if you continue to smoke.
State didn't
do that. So maybe we need to do the educational part of it. And if the kids, I hate to say it, but kids are going to do stupid things. And if they're educated, maybe they'll make less stupid decisions. Instead of banning things and enticing them almost to go after it because they're told not to.
Enticing them.
I didn't want you to interrupt one of Mom's gems because you're talking
good.
Over. That was one of Mom's gems, and I had to let her finish it.
Thank you.
We've got 2 minutes
DeVal
left
Patrick,
here. Anything that you want to say?
Transportation fund. DeVal Patrick Tobacco Control's funding. The state gets $900 million in tobacco tax revenue. All of that money is supposed to be used for tobacco education and prevention. The state of Massachusetts uses $2.7 million for all of the boards of health in all of the state of Massachusetts that was cut by DeVal Patrick during the transportation bill administration. And what I believe is that the tobacco tax revenue isn't meeting it, and they got to run that train. And if they don't run that train, people are going to get even more upset. Right? I mean, we're running the train from Fall River, and it's a transportation bill paying for that, and that was the last tobacco tax increase.
Well, this bears more conversation down the road. Let's keep an eye on this. Have you back in for more conversation. Karen, very nice meeting you.
I think
you kind of balance. You add balance,
too. We do add balance. This is not an easy business.
It's like a yin and a yang of e-juice and tobacco. I like it. Maybe add some Guy Glotis in and see what we have for a concoction here. We're going to wrap up this segment. Hayes.
Sorry.
Hey,
it's okay.
He
doesn't mind. He's gonna stick around for another segment. Hey, just quick reminder coming up at 8 o'clock, Cross-Check Radio with the great Kevin Stevens, 2-time Stanley Cup winner, along with Alex Bezanson, who's gazing at me in the next room, and Andy Bernstein. Great program. Definitely want to check it out coming up at 8 o'clock. But we're going to step aside just for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk about putting differences to work. Jeffrey, putting differences to work. You might want to listen to this segment with Doreen A. Lang. Coming up in just a moment here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, here is the final segment of the radio program, the proverbial cherry on top, you might say. And we have a very special guest. We have authors on from time to time. The idea is to get their works out there. And I don't just pick any author. Usually I'll have a conversation with you. A lot of times they're known authors to me, and this is no different. As we teased earlier on the show, for a return engagement, we have Doreen A. Lang here to talk with us about her third book. Doreen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
How are you doing since the last time we chatted?
Busy writing.
It never stops, huh?
I'm going to take a break for a while. I hope to promote this book and go out and talk about it and get people jazzed about the subject.
So your first book was Hanging On to Your Stars. And as you kind of talked to me before we went live, on purpose, you called it Volume 1. Now, you also did a second book named...
My second book is How to Drive Employee Retention in the First 90 Days.
Now, your third book... What is the title of your third book? Well, I have it in front of me, but I want you to tell folks what it's called.
It's called Putting Differences to Work, Secrets from a Multi-Generational Workforce.
Very nice. Where did what made you want to write this third installment?
I had a plan when I wrote my first book, and that was to help people engage their employees in such a way where they would not lose them within the first 90 days. They would create the kind of employee they want to be productive and to enjoy the culture. So that's the first book, How to Engage Employees and Retain Them for the First 90 Days. And I made that volume one purposely because I wanted to then help people learn how to or understand how to retain employees beyond the first 90 days. So this book here, I interviewed 25 people from 5 different generations. So the youngest person I interviewed was 15 years old, and all the way up to somebody who's 81. And the only criteria was they had to be working. I wanted to learn, and I asked the same questions. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What motivates you? What's the best boss you ever had? What's the worst boss you ever had, etc. So they all answered the same questions. And this is a compilation of all of these interviews, because I personally love reading interviews. I love to read what people say. But the questions are all the same. But the answers are very different, unlike what people would think for the certain generations.
I would ask you, is if you're sitting and you're looking at the different, did you find any similarities between the closeness in generations and any major differences? If there was a gap from somebody who was 15 or 16 years old to somebody who might be 65 plus?
Now, that's a great question. The younger generation, Generation Z, and millennials, very similar. I asked them, what motivates you? And most of them said money. But it wasn't what you think. They don't get excited about money. You know, getting out of bed in the morning and they can't wait to make money. They cited that's why they're at work right now, because they need the money. You try renting an apartment in Boston today. So money does motivate them, but I really explain in the book that money isn't really a motivator, unless it's a lot of money. It's a need. But they exclaim that that's really what does get them out of the bed in the morning, and that's why it's so important for people to understand that if someone's working for pay, you've got to pay them as much as you can if you want to keep them, because they will go down the street for 50 cents or more. That's why they're working right now. They need the money.
What was it though? Because it's interesting. My philosophy is, as I was coming up, and I noticed this I noticed a difference from my parents' generation and my generation, but my children and the generation younger than my children, as you said,
Generation Z.
Yep. It's different. I was taught that if you are somebody who is a salaried employee and you are given a wage, the idea is you work until you get the job done, whether that means it's 40 hours, 45, 50, 55 hours, even 70. But the younger generation sees it as, I'm being paid for 40, and I'm not working more than 40. Is that something that I don't know if that was part of your line of question, but that's something that just myself, my own personal observation, when you talk about somebody is how they're paid, and the philosophy to, if you're somebody who is given X amount annually, you're expected to work so many hours.
Yes, what's interesting about that is that salary employees don't need as much encouragement, feedback, rewards, because they're on a career track. But the people that are hourly, these younger folks that are hourly, they really understand they're just learning, and in order for them to stay and be loyal to you, They really need you to give them great feedback, positive encouragement. So it's a different mindset when someone is hourly younger than somebody that is older hourly and salaried.
So like looking as I'm thumbing through the book, the thing that was interesting is that you actually put the folks that you interviewed, are these their real names? And they're real, you don't give the companies or anything, but you give a name, an age, and what the job is.
Right. So I told them in order to get candid information, I told them, you can be very honest, I'm going to change your name. And since my series is Hang On To Your Stars, I gave them all celestial names. So there's stars out there called Borealis, and there's all these different star names. So I gave them all a star name to be, really just to so I don't use their names, so they could be very honest with me with their answers. But I did give the exact age, and I did give what their position they have. I interviewed one gentleman who's 80 years old, and after I interviewed him, he was such an interesting, nice guy you could meet, investment banker down the Cape. And after I sent it to him so he could read it and make sure I was accurate, because I wanted to be very accurate, exactly what they said, not my opinion, not my thoughts, their words. I sent it to him, and he returned it and said, this is great, Doreen, but here's the problem. And I said, what's that? And he said, you made me 81. I'm only 80. So, you know, so just so funny. People, the older generations loved doing the interviews. The younger generation, it was like pulling teeth. They just didn't have time for me. I don't know if they didn't see the value in it. Gen Z was the most difficult to get back to me. They just, but I had to meet them in like grocery stores. They didn't know me. So I had to kind of have them trust that I was really writing a book. I wouldn't use their name. So that was hard for some people. I ended up having to pay people in the end to get them to get back to me, the Generation Z, but I didn't have to pay the others.
Isn't it interesting that there has to be some kind of a reward for you to be able to get that from the younger generation as opposed to the older folks who are more willing to be forthcoming about what's going on. That's definitely very interesting. And looking through the book, you can see, and I like that, you can see the questions that you asked and what their answers were. I think the two that I would be curious about as to the differences were the best boss.
Yes.
And the worst. Can you give us stories? What was that like, getting stories in where there's something like you had to keep yourself composed because maybe you might chuckle and go, oh, no.
Yeah. Some of the best bosses were bosses that encouraged people to learn. They would support them. One woman who's a hairstylist has young children and wants to work all day but needs to leave for an hour to pick her kids up and go home and bring them to the babysitter and come back. Well, if you work 9-to-5 job, there's a chance you're not going to be able to do that. But this hairdresser that's actually local, her boss says, no, that your kids are important to you. You're important to me. Go home and do that and come back. We won't schedule people during your time out. And that kind of support, you know, she's been there for 6 years and she has no plans on leaving. So it's really a boss that sees you as a person and works with you so that you're happy.
What is onboarding? What does that mean? Because it seems like that was one of the questions that you asked them in regards to onboarding. For somebody who might be thumbing through your book and go, onboarding, what is that?
Right. Or years ago, they called it orientation. A couple of days of training, and then that's your job, especially around the Industrial Revolution. But now, onboarding is a process which will take, it should take about a year. And what it does is it acclimates you to the culture, introduces you to the socialization, educates you onto the software programs. It really teaches you how to operate within that organization from soup to nuts. People should go so far as to bring them into meetings at the higher level so they can understand the issues. But it really acclimates them to every aspect, from the logistical as well as a social component to the organization.
Okay, we're speaking with Doreen A. Lang. She's here to talk about her third book, Putting Differences to Work, Secrets from a Multi-Generational Workforce. And I think this is a fantastic book for whether you're somebody who is in the workforce. Maybe you might be somebody who is in management. Maybe you're somebody who wants to kind of get an idea as to your workforce, how their mindset is and how they see things. And it helps you. Am I wrong here, Doreen?
No, you got it. Matter of fact, I'm excited to offer people Volume 1 and Volume 2. I'm bundling them at a very good price, much lower price to buy them together. And they can go on my website, hangontoyourstars.com, and just choose Senior Living Bundle or Business Bundle, and you'll get both books. I'll sign them for you if you like. You know, when you order them on my website, I will sign them if you like, and I will send them right to you. So they're also available on Amazon, but the bundle is just through my website. And I'm hoping people will really read this and look at their... The retention is a crisis right now with senior living communities. We're having an incredible time trying to hold on to people. People are jumping ship because they don't feel supported, and this book will show you how and guide you through that.
It's interesting that... this is the first time that I've actually seen a book that's been put together that kind of goes that in depth, especially here locally, whether you're a small business, small business owner, somebody who has a growing and thriving business. So I would ask you this: my generation, Generation X, what would they like to interview? What would they like, and what were some of their values? I want to see where I kind of measure up.
Sure. That's interesting. I enjoyed them. They were really respectful about getting back to me timely, and they gave me a lot of content. I think they knew it was important, and I really was passionate about this. So they were really great. They were great to work with, and I mean that sincerely. No difficult getting people. What I found with this particular generation is they're on the track of the ones that I interviewed, I can only speak of. Mm-hmm. Family was very important to them. Their career was also very important. Their eyes are open to how they're going to be able to balance their careers and their family. But what's interesting is when I asked, they're the only generation when I asked what motivates you, they did not even mention money. I thought that was very interesting because their focus is right now on, you know, WIIFM, what's in it for me? What's going to make my career grow? And they really weren't, they're kind of landed where they are financially. They accept that right now in their career, so that wasn't a big motivator. They're interested in other ways to promote themselves and grow.
What do you think, going back to Generation Z and the millennial generation, what did you feel, why do you feel that it was so hard to be able to get them to want to sit down and talk? What is it about the younger generation that seems as though they are, their attention or being able to attract their attention is something that I think needs to be studied?
Yeah, I think you're right. I was personally disappointed that it took me so long. That's what took me so long to kind of finish the book, was I had trouble having them get back to me. I hate to generalize, because that's what I want to do with this book, is say, no, everyone is very different. Put differences to work. Mm. But the ones I had difficulty getting back to me was they really couldn't keep their eyes off their phones, even when they were talking to me. So I was trying to get their attention to say, this is really important to me. Would you be willing to do this for me? I'll pay you, you know, just trying to get them to answer me. So I don't understand if it was a time. They didn't want to give me their time. But the young people that did give me their time were fabulous people. I mean, I've got one young woman in here who's I think she's 15, and she's, I believe, a music teacher on the side. And she teaches young kids with autism and all other kind of learning disabilities, music and voice. And she's really devoted to this, and she's under 20 years old, and she's got this commitment to herself and to people. So she would be a phenomenal employee to work with, because she's already very focused and has an intrinsic motivation. So, you know, we really can't generalize, even though we want to. It's so easy and lazy to do that. But we're all very different, and it's really finding out what makes these people tick.
Well, I also ask in that regard is that I have three children who are in those two generational, you know, I have a Generation Z and I have two millennials. And I want to better understand them as my children. And I would be even, well, I actually, I get grandchildren who are, I mean, one of them just reached 10. Actually, women, hold on. Where would Generation Z be? Would that actually be... What's the depth of Generation Z? Do we know?
It goes about when they're 15 years old
So I don't even know what. Have we even coined
it? Oh, I know.
Anything yet for that? So I'd be curious as to how my grandchildren, how they will be similar or dissimilar to my children and to my generation and even my parents' generation. It's just interesting to know that there are different philosophies with, you know, when you were born, per se.
Absolutely.
We got a few minutes left here. What was the, other than trying to, you know, get these interviews, and I like how you went out and almost like cold calling, you know, hey, can we do this interview? Was there any difficulty in kind of putting the book together? What was it like to put the book together itself?
Putting it together wasn't the difficult part at all, because I had a plan. You know, I was going to break it in generations, and I was going to do it chronologically, and I knew the names I was going to use to give people alphabetically, so it's easy for people to track. What's really difficult is when I interviewed people who were really struggling in their careers, and they're in their 60s, and they never learned technology, and now they're expected to know technology. So baby boomers that never learned technology were having a really hard time, and in some cases they weren't even feeling healthy anymore, because they want to retire but they can't afford to retire, but they don't understand new technologies, and they explain that in there. So really interesting what's out there and how you really can support the different people to keep them on board, happy, if you can just dig down a little bit and find out what makes them tick.
And that's what's also interesting is you know, looking through your book, is that at the end of your generational interviews, you kind of give a breakdown. You kind of give an overall synopsis.
Yes. Yes. I do summarize and compare the different people and whatnot. But I will give the listeners a really important tip that will guide them through doing their own investigation. Doctors do it. Doctors make their rounds, right? They check on their patients. And the patients look forward to them coming in, and they get to know them a little bit. They make their rounds. Leaders and managers need to do the same thing. They need to strategically put a plan together to wander. Put in your date book, put in your phone to remind yourself different times of the day, different days of the week. Go around, talk to your people, find out about them, ask how they're doing, what are they up to this weekend, did they have a nice weekend? Get to know them. It builds this trust, and then you start to learn about these different individuals within the organization, and they start to feel like they're part of a bigger picture. And the really great thing about it all is they begin to trust you. So they start to tell you things that you would never have learned if you didn't go around and say, hi, how are you? Because you can't manage behind a desk.
Okay, we are privileged to have Doreen A. Lang here, CEO and Chief Engagement Officer with Hang On To Your Stars, LLC, as a company born from her desire to help businesses create organizations full of passionate and engaged employees while saving a fortune in hiring costs. And what's also great about having her here and talking about this book, this is a book that engages not one, not two, not three, but five generations who are working. This is the first time probably that there is a book that of this magnitude. And she's also offering a great deal that, because this is volume two, she's willing to give you a package, Hang On To Your Stars, volume one, and then, of course, Putting Differences To Work, volume two.
Correct.
If folks want to find out more about your book, or to be able to get both books, how can they do that?
All they have to do is go on to hangontoyourstars.com, and you'll see right on the front page that you can purchase the bundles or the two books together at a reduced price.
Anything in closing? You got anything else in the works that we can look forward to having you back and discussing?
I'd like to give these books some legs right now. I really feel it would be a great idea for managers to buy these for all their managers, meet once a week, and just talk about each interview and find out why that person did and said the way they did, so they can learn the generations. Use this as a guide and a working tool. I would like people to think about that rather than just for the fun of it. Actually apply this and discuss it amongst themselves.
Other platforms, Kindle, audiobooks, is that in the works or is it already available?
It's in the works.
Good.
Great. Excellent. Question. Thank you.
And as I promised her off, we've had conversations, Doreen and I, love to have her back as a co-host. I've already kind of mentioned that. As you know, we do that from time to time. We have different voices that are on, so you don't just hear my voice or you hear my opinion, that there are other folks who come in and join the program. And so we will have her on in the near future to be a guest and be a co-host. And also what we do with the co-host is give them an opportunity to give some insight into some of the guests who will appear on the show. So at least it's a better program if somebody is in the know and they feel as though there's a comfort to knowing who the folks are that are going to be on the program. So we look forward to that. And again, hangontoyourstars.com.
That's right.
Thank you. Doreen A. Lang, please check out her website. Check out these books, especially if you're somebody who is climbing in management and want to get a better idea and feel as to the multi-generational employees that you can tap into. Well, that is all the radio program that we have. If you've missed any of the program, you can always go to the website, 959WATD.com. Scroll down and click on the Monday Night Talk banner for all the shows. I think we're closing in on 1,000 podcasts that we have up now since dating back almost 10 years. But till next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.